Hey friends, welcome to the Radical Radiance podcast. I am your host, Rebecca George, and I am so thrilled to be with you today for our conversation with author Jordan Rayner all about his new book, Redeeming Your Time. I think you're really, really going to enjoy this conversation. I got a lot out of it, and I think you will too. But before we get to the conversation, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors, the Shine Bright Journal. The Shine Bright Journal is a free 100-page downloadable journal that you can go grab today at radicalradiance.live that will help walk you through a lot of what we talk about around here. How do we radiate the heart of Christ in everything we do in our lives, in our work, our relationships, all the things. So go grab it today at radicalradiance.live. I think that's it for now. Help me welcome our new friend, Jordan Rayner, to the show. Jordan, welcome to the show. I'm so thrilled to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rebecca.
This is going to be really fun. We were talking before we hit record, and I've been so excited for you to write another book so that I would have a reason to have you on the show, because I feel like my people are just really going to love you, because we're cut from the same cloth in that we love creating things and speaking and writing from a very gospel-centric place and bringing that into the work that we do. And I'm thrilled to see you do a book on time, because it matters so much, and I'm so excited for us to chat about that today. Your new book is called Redeeming Your Time, 7 Biblical Principles for Being Purposeful, Present, and Wildly Productive. And I want to hear the story behind your time story. Like, why did time matter to you? Why did you want to write a book about it?
Yeah, so I've always been a really intentional guy, right? So I spent the first 10 years of my career as a tech entrepreneur. I started and sold a couple of different companies, all while building a very young family. I'm 35 now. And so I've always been obsessed with time management, stewarding my time well, as Paul says in Ephesians 5:16, redeeming our time, because the days are evil, because we are running out of time to do the work that God has called us to do in this life. And so because of my obsession with this, I've read more than 40 books on this topic over the course of my career, but I have 3 major problems with them that really kind of are the birth story of Redeeming Your Time. You know, number one, almost every time management book on the market is what I would call works-based productivity. Nearly every time management guru says the path to peace, if you're feeling swamped in this season of life, the path to peace is found in implementing their system, right? So go do time management exercises X, Y, and Z, and then you will find peace. Mm. As Christ followers, that's crazy, right? Like, we have peace in the person of Jesus Christ, and we manage our time well as a response of worship. But that's just a very different starting point for a book. So that's reason number one. Problem number two with other time management books is they fail to account for how the author of time managed his time when he came to earth in the person of Jesus Christ. You know, Christian or not, I think it's really hard to argue with the fact that Jesus was the most productive person to ever step foot on the earth. And yet, I don't know of a single time management book that has looked at the gospel biographies, right, to see how he stewarded his time. That's crazy. We'd be foolish not to study these. And I know a lot of people don't think that the gospels have a lot to say about how Jesus walked, but they do. A lot, in fact, right? They don't show him walking around with a to-do list or a calendar. You know, but they do show him fighting distractions, like the guy who dropped through the roof while he was preaching, right? Fighting for solitude, seeking to be busy without being hurried, right? So they show Jesus facing a lot of the same challenges that you and I, Rebecca, and our listeners face as we seek to steward our time. But he was infallible God, so we can assume that he managed his time perfectly. So I wanted to write a book that studied this, and that's really what Redeeming Your Time is, right? These 7 timeless time management principles from the life of Christ, mapped to more than 30 hyper-practical practices that help us live out those principles here in the 21st century. And that really brings me to the third problem I have with other time management books that are really the reason why I wrote this one. A lot of time management books fail to connect all the pieces of the time management puzzle. Right. Before I wrote this book, if you and I were going out for coffee, and you probably don't struggle with time management, so this wouldn't be an issue. But then you're like, Jordan, I'm swamped. I don't know how to get unswamped.
Yeah.
I would recommend a dozen books to you, which is the last thing you want to hear. Right. But I did that.
I don't have time to read a book.
You don't have time to read one book, much less 12. But I would do that because all of those books focus on a critical piece of the time management puzzle, but no one book kind of connected all the pieces together. And that's kind of what I've tried to do with this book. So that's kind of my perspective and the story that brought me to writing on this particular topic.
Yeah, Jordan, that matters so much. The first thing you said is, I think, the root of a lot of our problems, of the books that are I see flying off shelves in Target and Barnes & Noble right now, is they maybe approach, okay, how do we be successful in our work or our call, the call on our lives that feels so overwhelming. It already feels overwhelming enough. And then rather than the core message being the gospel, and there's some principles that certainly help us be efficient and work well and steward our time well, but the core of it being something greater than our own success and our own glory.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. That is why we read books that don't impact our lives. That is why we read books that leave us feeling like we're not enough, or that we just can't quite do enough to get to whatever it is, right? And so I love that you're stopping and being like, wait a minute. No, the narrative is wrong. The narrative is what's steering us in the wrong direction. So I think that matters a lot. And even the title of the book, Redeeming Your Time, comes from Paul's words in Ephesians 5:16. I would love to hear, why are Paul's words here so meaningful to you? And what does that idea of redemption of time mean to you?
Yeah, you know, short answer as to why it's so important to me is because I believe this is a huge part of our response to the gospel. I think Paul makes this really clear in Ephesians. You know, Paul basically spends the first four chapters of Ephesians reminding his readers of the gospel. In Ephesians 5:1, he reminds his readers as their status as of dearly loved children of God. And then he goes on and basically answers the question, okay, Paul, what is our response to our adoption as children of God? And he says, redeem the time. He says, see then that you walk circumspectly, some translations say carefully, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. That's Ephesians 5, I think 15 through 16. Paul's essentially saying that this is part of the response to the gospel, to redeem our time, manage our time as carefully as possible. And we don't do it. I love that you already pointed this out, Rebecca. We don't care about time management so that we can, quote, be more successful, right? That's not the purpose. The purpose is service, and more specifically, service to the Lord and his agenda in the world, right? So what's his agenda? Why should we care about redeeming our time? Because redeeming our time allows us to do more good works for others that bring glory to God. See Jesus' words in Matthew 5:16, create for his eternal kingdom, make disciples, impress the Lord's commands on our children. See Deuteronomy 6, and just enjoy God and his good blessings, as Paul talks about in Philippians. That's why we care about redeeming our time, right? That's why Paul commanded us to redeem our time. And it's part of the reason why I care so deeply about this topic.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, but I'd love to give you the chance to dig into it more. The real core premise of the book is Jesus is the solution. The gospel is the solution to our time management challenges. But maybe, you know, a listener is listening today and they're like, okay, great, Rebecca, but like, what does that actually mean to me on a Tuesday, right? Like, unpack that for her.
Totally. I'll do it by telling a story, right? So the Gospel of Luke, actually in a few of the Gospels, we hear this account of Jesus going on the Sea of Galilee with his disciples, right? And I love the language Luke uses, because when the storm comes, Luke says the boat was being swamped. And I love that we translate it to that word, because that is exactly how we feel today. We don't feel swamped by wind and waves, unless, unfortunately, you're in Texas, Louisiana, being swamped by a hurricane. not to make light of that. But we do feel swamped by our to-do lists and by our hurried schedules. And again, two ways Jesus is the solution to our time management problems, our feeling of being swamped. You know, number one, again, he gives us peace before we do anything, right? Look at the disciples in the boat. The disciples in the boat didn't do anything to calm the chaos around them. They trusted the sleeping God man in the boat, right? And second, again, to kind of reiterate what I already said a few minutes ago, Jesus shows us how the author of time would manage his time. I don't think we really appreciate it. We talk a lot in our churches today about how Jesus was 100% God. And yes, he was. But we don't talk very much about the fact that he was also 100% man. This is the doctrine of the incarnation, right? Jesus was constrained for 33 years to a single place and a single time, one moment in time. That's wild, right? And you know, we read the Gospels John Mark Comer's written a lot about this, that we read the Gospels for their theology and for their ethics, and that's it. And those are good things. Of course, the Gospels have a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
But Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are biographies of how Jesus walked. And when you and I read a biography about, I don't know, Steve Jobs or Oprah or whatever today, sure, we care about what they said and the big speeches they gave, but we also pay attention to the day-to-day habits, lifestyles that they lived, and we try to emulate what they did so that we can have similar results. So if we want to walk in the way of the way, we would be wise to look at the Gospels and say, how did Jesus walk? And again, that's what this book is all about, these seven timeless time management principles. For example, principle number three, Jesus frequently dissented from the kingdom of noise. Jesus spent a ton of time in what the Gospels call lonely places or solitary places. Yeah. That stands in stark contrast to the way that we live our lives and do our work today. That is a timeless principle, and it's going to look different for Jesus as to how he practiced that in the first century and how we practice it today. But that's what the book is all about. Let's look at these principles and then map them to modern day practice that help us walk like Jesus walked today.
Yeah, that's so good. Man, there's so many things I'm thinking of there. And one of them is, I think sometimes, and I'm having to confront this in my own life, sometimes we think we just can't do whatever that time thing is that we know God's calling us into, whether it's rest, Sabbath, even just seeing the people around us. Like, I was so convicted during the pandemic as I read through the Gospels of just how much Jesus just stopped and noticed and served and loved the people around them. And there were times last year where the only person that we got to maybe talk to outside of our spouse was, you know, the girl checking us out at the grocery counter every week. Yeah. And I started realizing, like, man, I know her name because I see her name tag, but I don't, she's checked me out for the last 27 weeks in a row. And I have been so busy listening to a podcast in my earbuds or answering an email while she's just scanning my groceries. And I'm really just keeping myself in that constant state of stress. And I'm totally missing an opportunity to share the love of Christ with somebody. I don't know if she knows the Lord. I don't know. You know, she's been helping people find toilet paper and all the things all day, and she's having a really rough season. So I want to see her. I want to show the love of Christ to her in this moment. And so I just began asking God to help me not miss that, especially in a season where I could get some good practice because life looked so different.
Totally.
And so
I think there's two critical things. You already touched on one of them that we have to do in order to seize those moments, to redeem those moments, those times for God's glory and for the advancement of the gospel. Number one, we got to get comfortable being bored. We have to dissent from the kingdom of noise and refuse to listen to a podcast every 3 minutes that we have free at the grocery store. And number two, and this one's hard for me, we have to resist the urge to hurry. We have to embrace productive busyness, right? Jesus was crazy busy in the gospel, so much so that his family thought he was out of his mind in one account, right? Literally, those are the words that they use that we translate. So he was busy, but he was never hurried, right? He was never busy in a way that made him frantic or anxious. He always had time to look the people in the eyes, right? And see what was going on in their lives and stop and care for them. And again, that's such in stark contrast to the way I live my life a lot of times, Rebecca. So that's been really convicting for me and something I've been really battling with too.
Yeah, same here. But one of the things that I think is going to be really impactful to our people is, because I know a lot of my listeners struggle with this, is the fact that the gospel is our ultimate source of both rest and ambition, that we can hold, we get to hold both of those in our lives. Yeah. But ambition is a word, hustle is a word, those types of words trip us up, and we have been a part of a culture that has perpetuated that in a not gospel-centric way.
Yeah.
And so what does this mean for listeners? How do we hold both? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think you see this all throughout, especially Paul's letters, right? You know, Jesus was crazy busy. Paul, the amount of time that Paul talks about how hard he worked is crazy, right? So hustle, if you want to call it that, can be a really good thing. I'll try to answer the question this way. Every night when I put my girls to bed, I have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and an almost 2-year-old. I tell them, I say, hey, girls, you know daddy loves you no matter how many good things you do? I say, yeah. I was like, you know daddy loves you no matter how many bad things you do? And they say, yeah. I was like, who else loves you like that? And I always say, Jesus. Or Kate, my 5-year-old theological stickler, will say, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit.
Which I love is the most that adorable so much.
Thing ever. I know. I love it. She's a riot. She's the best. But, like, we've got to hear those same things, those same words spoken to us in the context of stewarding our lives and being productive, right? God doesn't need you and me, Rebecca, to be productive, to write these books, to have this podcast. If we die tomorrow and he wants this work to continue, he's going to do it. Job 42, his purposes will not be thwarted. But if we're honest with ourselves, I think a lot of times we need ourselves to be productive in order to feel a sense of self-worth. And again, there's certainly proper ambition in the Gospels for being productive because we believe our work is a means of advancing the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. But we've got to recognize the truth that the gospel frees us from the need to be productive, right? The good news of the gospel is that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. And because we did nothing to earn our salvation, there's nothing we could do to earn any more of it or lose an ounce of it, right? No matter how productive we are in this life, our status as adopted children of God is secure. And ironically, that's the truth that leads us to want to be wildly productive, because working to earn someone's favor is exhausting. But working in response to unconditional favor, that's intoxicating, right? You want to take big swings. You want to be productive for the person that's giving you that security. That's how the gospel is this double-edged sword of rest and ambition.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, one of the things that I have been so convicted of lately is just the amount of time that we intake information, right? Whether it's online, the news, all the things. Okay, you have a really interesting perspective on the news that wildly agree with. And I want to talk all about it because there were some times in 2020 that I remember even saying to my spouse, like, I can't talk about it anymore. Like I actually for the rest of tonight, like I need to not talk about what's going on in the world anymore. And I, for the most part, do not watch the news either. And I want to hear your philosophy on this. I want to talk not watching the news. Let's go there. Just a quick break in the conversation to tell you about one of our sponsors, Primally Pure. Primally Pure is a skincare brand that uses only pure ingredients that bring real, like actual results. Cleansers, toners, body oil, natural deodorants, they've created all of the above. And right now I am loving their cleansing oil. It takes my makeup off so well, you guys. I think you would just love it. So just for the Radical Radiance community, they have created a coupon code for 10% off your first purchase site-wide. So go to the website today and use the code Rebecca10 with a capital R, so Rebecca10 at checkout. I hope you enjoy that so much, and let's get back to our conversation.
Yeah, so I consume zero news. I don't watch it.
That's amazing.
I don't read it. I don't listen to any podcasts. Nothing. None of the things. And in large, I started this probably 6 years ago, and it's been one of the most life-changing practices of my life because I was recognizing that news wasn't making me informed. News wasn't providing me with any information that was relevant to my callings. It was just making me angry and anxious, right? And I had enough of it. Mm-hmm. So I just stopped. But here's the ironic thing. Here's what I found and one of the 32 practices I share in the book. I found that I'm actually not totally ignorant, surprisingly. And my secret is that once I started eliminating my time consuming information, my friends started curating the news for me. I hear about every single thing that matters to my life and work. I'm a huge Tim Keller fan. I love Tim Keller. When Tim Keller tweeted that he had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, 8 of my friends texted me the news within 10 minutes of the news breaking, right? I hear about everything. I hear about hurricanes. I hear about pandemics, race riots. I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. I hear about every new surprise Taylor Swift album drop. I hear it all. And I hear all these things without having to spend a single moment wading through the 99.9% of content on news websites and social media that's totally meaningless to my life. My friends do it for me. They do it willingly. And honestly, it's kind of a bizarre form of delegation, right? Like, I've delegated this to my friends, even though they don't know that I've done it. And that sounds selfish, but here's the deal. Like, I try to convince my friends to stay off of news services, but they don't. Most of my friends are going to continue to feast at the all-you-can-eat information buffet, and that's their choice. In the meantime, I know that they are going to willingly, naturally, and sometimes unknowingly curate that information for me. They're going to bring me back the banana pudding from the buffet so I can enjoy that, but I don't have to get out of my seat to go to the line. So my advice to you is, this is a great way to dissent from the kingdom of noise. Just let your friends curate news for you, and probably have a lot less anxiety and anger in your life.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a couple pockets in our lives. News is one of them. And I think social media, for a different reason than maybe one would expect, is another way that we waste a lot of time. And the reason I say that, so a good reminder of that for me was watching the movie News of the World. Have you seen that Tom Hanks movie?
No.
Okay, so he goes, it's set back in, I think, the Civil War, and he goes around and travels and tells the news. He reads the newspaper to people. Huh. And it was this revelation for me of like, wait, 100 years ago, people had to like pay a nickel to come and listen to the guy that actually said what was really going on in the world. But we didn't have the tools that we have now to just have this instant influx of information. And so how freeing must that have been to live in a world where you didn't have to know what was going on states away from you? You didn't feel the need to know what was going on in all over the world. And that's just not the world that we live in anymore. And so that was interesting to me. And also, while we're on the time subject, I think we feel this great responsibility to every person that we've ever known online. Right?
It's crazy.
So everybody listening can't see Jordan laughing and shaking his head. But I came to realize like five years ago or so, it's like, man, I want to go to my best friend from high school's baby shower. I really do. It breaks my heart that I saw pictures of it. And I wasn't there. She lives in another state, Jordan. She lives on the other side of the country. Why do I feel personally responsible for her baby shower? Because I deeply loved her and was so close to her in a completely different season of my life. And I think we all feel that to some degree. Do you struggle with that?
I don't anymore. Because I just stopped using social a long time ago. Not altogether. I still have my accounts. I check TimePop and Instagram for a few minutes every day, and that's it. But, oh my gosh, when I was on Facebook every day for years? By the way, the fact that I'm so anti-news, anti-social, if you talked to me 10 years ago, this would sound radical. I was addicted to noise, especially news, especially social media. So I can totally empathize and recognize what you're talking about. But I don't recognize it for the last 5 years of my life. And I'll tell you what, these last 5 years, I've been more intentional. I've had deeper relationships and I've been way more productive than I ever have been in any other season of life. And I don't think those two facts are coincidental. I think the Lord has used those decisions to make me focus, to turn down the noise so I can be creative, so I can just think and hear my own thoughts. And most importantly, listen to what God's telling me, right?
Yeah.
It's impossible to listen to God's voice if we're constantly drowning in noise, right? That's reason number one to dissent from the kingdom of noise on a daily basis.
Yeah, I agree with you. I admire that a lot about you, because I also think with the work that we do, you have to put boundaries around it, or you're just going to subject yourself to groupthink all the time. Totally. And what you write and the words that come out of your mouth are going to be a summation of everybody that you admire and follow online too. And I certainly don't want that. I want to speak and write from a place that is is God-driven and gospel-driven and what he's really putting on my heart. And we have to put some guardrails in place or that's not going to happen, you know? So, totally. So yeah, that whole thing has been something that I've wrestled through in the last few years, especially since, and listeners will know this, I got married a couple years ago. I moved 9 hours away from Tennessee where I grew up and had lived my entire life. And so there's also, I think, in seasons of change, there's a wrestling out of that. Like I have friends there, I have friends here. I have to serve and love on the community that God has given me right now in this season. That's what we see evidence of in the Gospels, yeah, right?
Totally,
and so what does that mean? That means that every time I come and visit my family, I can't also be spread so thin trying to, you know, rekindle every bit of the community that I had in another season, you know?
Yeah,
so that's a very real thing in this season of my life that I'm having to navigate in a whole new way. So
Yeah.
Well, another part about time that I don't want us to kind of skip over is Sabbath. I would love to talk about Sabbath and kind of the shift for you from kind of this legalistic chore, maybe idea of Sabbath that maybe we grew up with and how it's a crucial part of your life now.
Yeah. Yeah. So growing up, I hardly ever thought about Sabbath. I grew up in the church.
Me neither.
But okay, that's super interesting, really. So you grew up in the church and never saw anybody do this.
Not well.
Wow.
No.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know a single family growing up that treated Sunday any differently than any other day of the week. And like from time to time I would hear about the fourth commandment, but it just seemed like one of those rules everyone was comfortable ignoring, kind of like, you know, driving under the speed limit. Like, I don't know. Like,
as long as you don't mow your grass on Sunday, like you're fine. Yeah.
You're good. And in those rare moments that I did think about it, it did seem like this legalistic chore, this day filled with things I couldn't do rather than a day filled with joyful things I could do. But then a few years ago, I was in a particular crazy season. I was releasing my first book called To Create. And I reread what Jesus himself said about Sabbath, and it totally changed my perspective. In Mark chapter 2, Jesus said Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So yes, throughout Scripture, we see that Sabbath is about ceasing, about stopping our labor, productive talk, whatever, not mowing the grass, whatever it is. But it's also a day for feasting on the Word and the good gifts that God has given us in and through our work, right? The best picture I've ever seen of this, I had a therapist years ago help me kind of piece this together. But you know, imagine there's this enormous banquet hall, right? And there's a beautiful table in the middle. It's filled with the most incredible foods you can imagine. And right there at the head of the table is Jesus, right? And all week long, you and I are the servers. We're running around the table. We're serving Jesus and his guests. We're busy. We're hurried, right? Sabbath is first an invitation to cease from that work. Put down the food tray, take off your apron, catch your breath. But here's where the analogy breaks down, because in a restaurant, the servers take their breaks in the kitchen or in the parking lot, right? They're invited to cease, but they're never invited to feast at the table with their guests. But you and I, Rebecca, our listeners, are co-heirs with Christ. See Romans 8:17. We are adopted children of God. We aren't invited just to cease from our work. We're invited to pull up a chair next to King Jesus and feast on his goodness and his gifts. That's what Sabbath is. So for my family, it's ceasing. We don't talk about productive things. We don't do productive things. We don't do laundry. We don't do dishes. But it's even more about what we feast on. You know, more time in the Word than we can get to during the week. Time with our church family. Feasting, in a literal sense, on food. We get takeout from the best places in town. We get crumble cookies almost every weekend, right? We just enjoy the gifts that God has given us. And it is by far the most life-giving thing my family does every week. My kids are 7 and 5. They have no concept of time, right? All they know is the time. When I explain a week, it's like, guys, it's the time in between Sabbath Sundays. And they get it. And every morning when they come out of the room, it's like, is Sabbath Sunday yet? I'm like, kids, it's Tuesday. We got a long way to go. But they're excited about it.
That's really cool. I love that you're modeling that for your kids. I talked with Ellie Holcomb last week, and she said something that I will never forget about time. We were talking about it was a similar conversation. And she said, I'm probably going to butcher it, but she said, He sets a feast for us, and we often will settle for the crumbs underneath the table.
Yeah.
And man, that's so true of how we see our time and how we see Sabbath so often. So I think that matters so much. And, you know, before we kind of jump into our bonus conversation that I'm really excited to have with you, I want to talk about the word no, because as you know, our primary audience is female. I don't know, Jordan, you may disagree with me. I feel like women may struggle with the word no more than men. Do you agree with that?
I can't speak for women.
Is that a hot
take? I've learned a long time ago not to speak on behalf of women, even though I have a unisex name. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going there.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I just know how many conversations I have about this very struggle with my people. And so as we talk about this very gospel-centric look at time, how does the word no play into that? And how do we maybe view it from a different way?
I'm so glad you asked this, because I do think this is a huge struggle. And I think Christians just aren't finding great resources about the word no in our broader culture, right? There's a really popular TED Talk from a few years ago that I think really accurately summarizes kind of modern thinking outside the church on this topic. The advice is basically, if unless you can say hell yes, say no, right? So unless this thing that you're presented with is like so exciting to you, you should say no. And like, I get it. Like, I get the appeal of extreme criteria, because we all need help being more selective in what we're saying yes to. But rule sets like hell yeah or no are entirely self-serving and out of step with the example of Christ, right?
Right.
It's a really good scene of this in Matthew 14. Jesus had just heard the news that his friend and cousin John the Baptist had been beheaded. And when Jesus heard about this, it's one of the times we see him withdrawing by a boat to be alone. Mm. Matthew, I think it's 14:13, says, Jesus withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. So understandably, Jesus just learned that John the Baptist was dead. All he wanted to do was be alone, but the crowds wouldn't let him. So the crowd saw Jesus in the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and they're literally, Matthew 14 tells us, they're running along the shore, waving Jesus to come in, because they wanted to be with him. The last thing Jesus wants to do in this moment is spend time with a crowd of people, right? So what's he going to do? Surely he isn't thinking of the crowd's request. Oh, wow, that's going to be awesome. Yeah, let's do it, right? And if there was ever a time that we would understand Jesus saying no, it's right then. But he didn't. He came into the shore. He saw the large crowd. And it says, Matthew 14:14 said, he had compassion on them and healed their sick, right? So now, to be clear, Jesus didn't always say yes to requests like this. Frequently in the Gospels, we see him saying no. Go check out Mark chapter 1. Jesus had a very deliberate no to people's requests. So, but it just leaves us in this place of, it's not as simple as hell yeah or no. The Christian life is a sacrificial life. And we need to think about how we're stewarding our time through the lens of Jesus. So it's a constant battle wrestling with, what do we say yes to? What do we say no to? And in the book, I outline what, for me at least, are some really helpful questions that I analyze to decide when to say yes, when to say no. I'm not sure
that's so good.
Time to get through them, but they're all there. There's 8 questions right there.
Great.
To help you, help you work through it.
Yeah, no, that's so helpful. I want people to go grab the book so they get that. I'm going to say the name of the book one more time. It's called Redeeming Your Time, 7 Biblical Principles for Being Purposeful, Present, and Wildly Productive. The book comes out today. I love when we get
October
to
October 19th. So, but all right. So this is why I asked this to release on October 19th, because I'm going to give your listeners an absurdly over-the-top incentive to buy the book
before. I want you to tell them all the things.
All right, all right. So I hate author pre-order campaigns. I think they're super lame. Seriously, it's like, pre-order my book and get like a downloadable bookmark. Honestly, who cares? So I like going over the top. So the whole book is about helping you walk like Jesus walked in the first century, how he managed his time today in 2021. So I'm going to give away a trip for a winner and a friend of their choice to go walk where Jesus walked on this epic...
Stop. To Israel?
Yeah. You're going to the Holy Land. 8 days. I'm paying for everything. So we're just going to give away this awesome trip to the Holy Land. And listen, I know a lot of us aren't comfortable traveling internationally right now.
Yeah.
Right? So we're giving the winner 3 years to book their trip to Jerusalem, or they can opt for an equivalent cash prize, which is basically like $5,000. So the book's out today. Go get it on Amazon or wherever you get books. That's step one. Then go to jordanrainer.com before midnight Eastern on October 23rd, Saturday, October 23rd. There's a form right there. You can enter the sweepstakes and win this trip or the cash prize or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We don't even have time. We're going to go there for a minute. You've clearly been to Israel.
I haven't. I've never been.
Jordan, you have to go.
I know. I'm not committing to this, but I'm probably going to meet the winners there for dinner. That's the plan.
Okay. How fun is that? Okay. You win. Yeah. You just win for pre-order bonuses. That's incredible. I think that's amazing.
That's what we try to do. Yeah.
I think that's incredible. My husband and I went in 2019. It was right before the pandemic. We're so thankful. When we look back at those memories, we lived in a world that was totally untouched by the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it still sometimes feels like a dream. I mean, there are times where I'll go, like, we actually went to Israel.
what was your favorite part?
Man, the first time you go, it's so, you're taking in so much and you're having to rewrite so much of the narrative of what you have pictured in your mind, especially if you grew up in the church, right? Like if you grew up with a flannel board and VBS and all the traditional things, right? You're rewriting what you thought the Sea of Galilee looked like. You're rewriting what you thought Mount Carmel would look like when you read in the Old Testament. And so there's just a lot of that feels very overwhelming and really just emotional. I cried so much in Israel. We would be headed somewhere. Yeah. And I had two before I went. I remember leaving Tel Aviv and heading to Jerusalem to where we were staying. And our tour guide read the Psalms of Ascent to us as we were ascending, to Jerusalem. And I just looked at my husband and we were both just like weepy. And it was the best. But I would say if I probably had a couple memories that were my favorite, we took a worship boat tour on the Sea of Galilee. And that was just amazing to picture you're in a boat that's similar to what you would have been in the time of Jesus. That was amazing. And then we did a day in Jerusalem where we went and saw, there's a couple sites that argue to be the one where Jesus was buried and resurrected. And just, I remember my husband saying, okay, whether this was it or not, we are in Jerusalem. We are in what is to be this is what it would have been, even if this isn't the one. And so we took communion and just had a time of worship there at the Garden Tomb. I journaled about it and I haven't actually picked up that journal in a while. Every once in a while I'll pick it up and I'll just read. Every day I would come back to the hotel and I would write about what I experienced that day because there was so much that even a day later I would think like, man, was Capernaum yesterday? Or, and so the first time you go, it's just a lot of unwriting of what you thought and a lot of just putting real memories to what we read in scripture. And so I will never read my Bible the same. Every time you read about that you've actually stood, it changes everything about the way you read scripture. So
I believe it.
I can't wait for you to go.
All those places are on the itinerary. So I hope.
Good.
How awesome would it be if one of your listeners won this trip? That'd be amazing.
And you guys could swap notes
about it. That'd be so cool.
Totally. Totally. So cool. Well, I'm excited to hear about your first trip. You're going to love it. So, well, I love that we got to end on that note. I'm excited for everybody to go grab the book and enter to win the trip. That's amazing. Jordan, I have loved this conversation about time, about your book. I can't wait for listeners to go grab it. Thank you so much for being with me today.
No, it's been a joy. Thanks, Rebecca.
How much did you love that conversation with Jordan? I got so much out of it. I can't believe he's giving away a free trip to Israel. Guys, you have to go grab his book and go enter like today, right now. It comes out today. So go grab it wherever you like to buy books. And I just hope you love this conversation as much as I did. I can't wait to be back with you next episode. We're going to be sitting down with the Miss Mustard Seed, Miriam Parsons, to talk about her new book, Feels Like Home. I can't wait to share it with you. I'll see you then.